A year after a devastating port explosion in Lebanon, the wait for answers continues and the economy remains in ruins. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Lebanon is holding a day of national mourning today to mark the first anniversary of a massive explosion that ripped through its capital, Beirut. The blast killed more than 200 people and injured more than 6,000. It happened at a port warehouse where ammonium nitrate was stored improperly, and the disaster has been described as one of the biggest non-nuclear explosions in history. In the last year, the nation's fortunes, already on the brink, have continued to decline. The World Bank says Lebanon is experiencing one of the worst depressions in modern times, as inflation soars and more than half the population lives in poverty. Sami Halabi, a director at policy consultancy Triangle, explains what life has been like for the last year there.
We are still trapped, physically trapped. The most Lebanese cannot travel, economically trapped. There's no way to get access to your savings. What people need to understand is that Lebanon is a heavily import-dependent country, and that means that in order to import, you need access to foreign currency. And that access has disappeared for the most part for most people. So driving to work is impossible because you cannot access fuel because, number one, even if you have the money, the fuel isn't in the country because the importers haven't imported it because they don't have the money. Therefore, there is no electricity to run your refrigerator. Let's say you have a dairy store, which is one of the main foodstuff industries and items that are consumed on a daily basis by the Lebanese. So you have all of these problems with your own subsistence, complemented by the fact that there's a structural collapse in the economic system. So because Lebanon has never really produced anything on its own and has really just been an import-dependent country, we don't really have an economic alternative at the moment. And so people are left destitute. And that's kind of where people stand at the moment.
And for you, what is it like trying to run a business like yours at the moment?
Our business works with a lot of international organizations. So our business is, thankfully, we're stable. We're able to stay afloat. But our office, for instance, was completely destroyed. Our office 700 meters from the port. And so, you know, putting everything back together again was a real struggle. But we are one of the lucky ones. I think for most people, the psychological effects of this are very heavy. You know, imagine trying to put yourself back together and then keep your team together and then run your business. It's a huge challenge that most people are just understandably not going to be up to.
Well, Sami's story is the kind that the BBC's Corinne Torbay has been hearing for months on the ground in Beirut. She told me there's a lot of anger, pain, and longing for closure.
But many people here say that this won't happen, at first because the wind is still very fresh, and second because they want to know what happened. There are still so many unanswered questions about the cause of the explosion, who is responsible. Each person in the country is kind of reflecting about what happened to them, how this has hurt them, either psychologically or physically, economically, in so many ways.
No senior officials have been held accountable for the explosion last year, and many people have said that represents corruption at the country's institutions. But there has been a new prime minister installed now. The EU has announced legal framework for sanctions. Perhaps those may be on the way. Is there hope for progress on the investigations that are ongoing and sort of the future of the country now?
This prime minister is still to form a cabinet. This country has been without a fully functioning cabinet for a year. So the country, as it is in tatters, as it is collapsing, all of this is happening while there is total paralysis on the political level. So you can imagine the level of desperation, anger, and the general mood in place.
Does the prime minister have a plan to try to get the economy back on track in some way?
Well, what the prime minister has been saying is that he wants to focus on short-term plans, especially to tackle issues like shortages in medicine, in fuel, things that are basic for survival. But next year we have legislative elections, so there will be a new parliament, and this cabinet will not be able to go beyond that. So they have very modest plans, but all of this depends on whether they will first be able to put together a cabinet, second, they will find the political will to do so, and decide to tackle those issues head on.
In the meantime, today, French President Emmanuel Macron with the UN is planning to host another humanitarian aid conference, and the goal there is to raise $350 million for Lebanon. There was a similar event not long after the blast last year. How much did that aid event help the people struggling in the country, and where did that money go?
This money goes into NGOs. It doesn't go to any governmental body, not only France. All the donors, all the international community at the moment is very adamant that it will help Lebanon once there is a government in place and this government starts taking like serious steps towards reforming the system. This money will be going to NGOs, and we have been seeing astronomical number of NGOs flourish in the country following the blast. There are plenty of NGOs dealing directly with affected people. There are also some sort of initiatives as well to support education, to support the healthcare system. But all of these are kind of targeted packages. So they go directly there. They don't go through any government body.
The BBC's Corinne Torbay for us in Beirut today. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
We've been keeping an eye on Chinese tech companies over the past week amid a regulatory crackdown in the nation. Today, shares of Tencent jumped 2.4% after notching double-digit declines yesterday. Checking some other numbers, benchmarks across Asia finished today's session little changed. European indices across London, Paris, and Frankfurt are now up in the 0.4% to 0.8% range. More than 3 million doses of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine today have begun arriving in 7 Southeast Asian nations from Britain. It's the latest country to send doses to the region, which is experiencing a surge in coronavirus cases. The move is also seen as a kind of vaccine diplomacy, as the BBC's Jonathan Head explains.
Britain's donation is being warmly welcomed and can only help Prime Minister Boris Johnson's aim of projecting post-Brexit British influence in Asia. The first country to try so-called vaccine diplomacy here was China, which donated millions of its Sinovac inactivated vaccine earlier in the year and sold even larger quantities at a time when Southeast Asian countries could not access US and European-made alternatives. The Biden administration has also made big vaccine donations. An early reward was President Duterte's decision last week to reinstate an agreement that lets American troops operate in the Philippines, a decision he said was influenced by getting vaccines from the US. However, the European Union has said it will direct all its assistance through the World Health Organization's COVAX facility. The US and Britain also expect most of their vaccine aid in the future to be channeled through COVAX.
That's the BBC's Jonathan Head reporting there from Bangkok. Finally, Mattel is honoring women who have been working in science and technology throughout the pandemic. It's unveiled a new Barbie recognizing Professor Dame Sarah Gilbert. She is the scientist who co-created the Oxford AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine. The toy maker's other new dolls include an Australian medic who helped create a reusable gown for health workers and a Brazilian biomedical researcher. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.